Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual of OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Sherry, a compulsive overeater from Hamilton, Ontario.
Hello, good evening, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for allowing me the privilege of serving today. As said, I am Sherry A., compulsive overeater in Hamilton, Ontario. And I'll start off with just reminding myself that acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And whenever what I need to concentrate on is not so much what needs to be changed in the world as what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. I'll start off with a qualification. I am 45 years old, and most of my life, I want to believe that I have been a compulsive overeater. I didn't know the term, of course. I just knew that I liked eating and I ate for everything, happy, sad, upset, joyful, peaceful, tumultuous, like it didn't matter. I ate over it. I tried many, many, many ways to stop myself from compulsively overeating, many ways. And when I was 33, a way that I started at age, like I said, 33, I started purging after binging, thinking that maybe that would help. Of course, it didn't. Now, throughout my entire life, I've always, I grew up in a Christian home, so I always knew who God was, always had a some measure of differing levels of relationship with him. And as I got older, you know, I got more and more committed in my faith, committed in my church, and all of that. So I used to beg God, please help me, please free me, please deliver me. You are God, you can do all things. And I did that so much with no seeming solution or change that my prayer started to change to the point where I started saying, you know, God, I think my eating problem is bigger than you're able to handle. And I know that doesn't make sense, God. This is exactly what I would say. I know that doesn't make sense because I know you're supposed to be all powerful, and I know you are. I do believe you are, but in this one area, I just don't think that you can. Maybe it's not you, maybe it's me, maybe the food just has too much of a hold on me. But for whatever reason, I just think you're not able to help me. And so I kept on trying, binging, purging, and all manner of things just to try to stop fasting, starving myself, punishing myself, trying to, I don't know if anyone ever did this one, chewing and then spitting out before swallowing. Like I just tried so many things. When I turned 45, so the day before my birthday this year in February, for the first time, I don't know, God just, he did this. I didn't realize it was him at the time. Afterwards, I realized. But on that day in my journal, I wrote, you know, you've freed me from other things, and you've had a 75% success rate in other addictions in my life. So though I can't see how I could ever be free from the food, but I'm going to trust your percentage rate. And so I wrote that in my journal on February 11, the day before my birthday. I'm just going to trust your percentage rate. You have a 75% success rate. So maybe you're able to do this for me as well. And I got to say that I didn't know it at the time, but that nugget, that tiny mustard seed, like that small thing, that small bit of faith was all God needed. Within a month, I was watching a movie one night, The Unbreakable Boy, if anyone has seen it. The father is an alcoholic in the movie, and he was having success in AA. And right there, it was like 1 a.m. in my living room watching this movie. And this question pierced my mind. And I had to pause the movie. And the question was, what's my goal? Like, what's my food goal? Because it was clear for an alcoholic, it's don't drink, right? I thought, okay, for a drug addict, it's don't do drugs, but I am eating. I can't say don't eat. And then my next thought was, I could never say don't have sugar. That can't be it. Of course, that was it. But at the time, that seemed so impossible. So I what's my goal? And I didn't have an answer. And that is how God got my attention. So I went to my first meeting the following Saturday. I actually had church that Saturday and I canceled everything, canceled all my responsibilities, and I went to this meeting. I knew nothing about it. This is March 15 of this year, 7 months ago or 8 months, however long, it was 7.5 months ago. Went to my very first meeting. I had never been to a meeting before. I knew not what to expect. And they were on step 11. It was exactly what I needed. So God was already working to draw me to Him. I just didn't know it. He didn't make my journey a linear journey, right? Just like straight step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He brought me in on step 11 of all steps. But he did this because he knew that that's exactly what I needed to hear even before I knew what the steps were. And so that very first week, let me tell you, remember my statements before February 11 when I used to say to God, I don't think you can free me from this food addiction. Like, well, I didn't say food addiction. I just said, I don't think you can free me from my eating problem. Day one was that was 2 days later for me, the 17th of eating abstinently, March 17th. And from the very first meal, I didn't know what to expect. I went and I bought a scale, and a lady at the meeting had spoken to me and she told me what plan she used. And, I knew nothing. So I was like, okay, I guess I can use your plan. And oh, I guess I need a scale. What's 4 ounces of protein? Like, what's that? So I went to Walmart, bought a scale. And so I was like, okay, Monday morning, I'm gonna start this thing. From that very first meal, I realized I'm not craving more food. I'm not wanting to eat between meals. I'm actually having 3 meals weighed, measured, and it was so surreal to me because I was expecting to be hungry. I was expecting to be miserable. I was expecting all these things, and none of it happened. So much so that by the third day, the Wednesday, I realized, and I wrote it in my journal, that this journey isn't about the food, it's about finding God for myself in a way that I had never met Him before, though I've known Him or of Him all my life. And so by that Thursday, 5 days after my very first meeting, God connected me to a sponsor, and her non-negotiables included 30 minutes a day with God, sending her my weighed and measured food for the day, having movement every day, 3 acts of self-sacrifice, going to a meeting and weighing myself every 2 weeks. And so I determined that if I want what she had, then I needed to do what she did. I needed to do exactly what she told me to do. And so I started doing that. And I kept hearing at meetings, you got to work the steps like your hair is on fire. And so I thought, okay, I'm gonna work the steps like my hair is on fire, right? And so I figure for this part of of my talk that I'm gonna share some lessons that I took from each step. Step one, I realized that step one, God actually did that for me at the movie. Not re I was powerless. I didn't have an answer to that burning question that he put in my heart. What I learned about step one, the unmanageability part, I knew I was powerless. Powerless made sense. Okay, I'm powerless. I can't. But what do you mean my life is unmanageable? My life's not unmanageable. It's only this one part of my life that I can't seem to have control over. Everything else is fine. My life isn't on, my eating is unmanageable. That's how I was thinking about it. But what I learned in step one is that the phenomenon of craving is unmanageable, and that unmanageability impacts every other area of my life. I couldn't manage my eating, but I also couldn't manage my emotions. I also couldn't manage my relationships. My emotions would just bubble up, and I would trip out, get angry, and I didn't realize that they were correlated with each other. So I learned that unmanageability isn't just in the food, but it's the being in the food actually keeps me unmanageable in many, if not all, aspects of my life. Step two, the came to believe that a power greater could restore me to sanity. I had a relationship with God, and I understood insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So I didn't think I was going to get much out of step two. I was wrong. The spiritual cataracts, pomp, and worship of my intellect, that was huge for me. Realizing that I thought that I was so smart. Thought I was so brilliant. And so worship, I realized that I had actually put myself on this pedestal where actually God alone should be. I was angry at God for not moving on my schedule or acting according to my script. And so I learned in step two, the words came to believe that a power greater than me, I knew that God was a power greater than me, but came to believe that he really could do what really and truly seemed impossible, and that he is actually in charge, and he doesn't have to act on my schedule. I get to act on his. So that's what I took from step two. Step three, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God, as I understood him. I was willing to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And it was interesting that one day I was rewriting step three as I was trying the step three prayer, sorry, as I was trying to learn it, and I was rewriting it. So I'm trying to write it from memory. And funny enough, this is in my journal. The words that I forgot, I said, where is it? Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better than one. Sorry, take away my difficulties that victory over them may prove that those I would help would help of thy power and thy love and I couldn't even remember the words way of life. And I realized that the three words that I stumbled over, prove and help instead of work with, and I didn't even remember the words way of life. Those were the very areas that I myself was struggling with, because I was trying to prove a point that I didn't need to prove. And the word the prayer doesn't say to prove, it says to bear witness. I was trying to help people where the prayer says to work with them. And I didn't even remember that it was a way of life that I was striving for. And these were the very areas that I was struggling with because I kept trying to keep myself in the driver's seat. So step three was very significant, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Step four, took me a long time. I loved step four, but it took me over a month to complete it. And I knew I was supposed to be doing it as my hair was on fire. I took a week off of work to try to work on it. And my list was just so long. I just had so many resentments. I didn't realize that I had that many resentments. There was a time when I felt like just, am I ever gonna get through this like 171 line, like in an Excel document? Not 171 people, but like one person may have like 20 things, and it felt like it was going to be forever and a day. And I felt like I wasn't doing it right. I was taking too long. Because I really was trying to go deep into it, and I kept hearing, "Do it like your hair's on fire," and I'm like, "I am," but then I'm not really getting as much out of it if I speed through it. And my sponsor, when I spoke to her, she said, "You know, you've got to do it based on what works for you. And so if you need to do it slow and you need to take your time and get it done, then you do that." And so step four really became a thorough heart excavation. It was very humbling. It was humbling. I would have never attributed words like entitled to myself before step four. And now I'm like, yeah, you can be very entitled, and you're not entitled to having things turn out your way. You know, it just turned my whole view of life and myself around. Step five, I wrote something about like a resentment about my sponsor in my resentment inventory. And of course, step five, we're supposed to tell another human being, in addition to God and ourselves, the exact nature of our wrongs. And I had determined, I had asked, talked to a couple fellows, and they're like, yeah, you probably shouldn't tell her. And so I had decided I wasn't going to, but I wasn't feeling settled. And when I asked God, he instructed me, no, you need to share it with her. Whew. So I did. It was a diff it felt difficult, but it actually wasn't. It was actually for her growth as well as mine. And these were her words, not mine. She told me that, that it was helpful to her to hear the things that I had said, as well as it was helpful to me to face that fear. So step five, I really learned to walk in God's direction and not my own, but not even sometimes in that which a fellow, I can get counsel from a fellow, but if the counsel hasn't brought peace, then perhaps there is still something else that God wants. Step six and seven, they felt like, oh, these are going to be the easy ones, right? Entirely ready to have God remove the defects. Yes, I'm ready. Take them away now. And seven, I asked him, please, please take them away. I give them to you. And did the prayer and did the stuff, but right. So I thought those were gonna be the easy ones. Well, the character defects didn't disappear overnight. It as silly as it is to me now, as I think about it, I genuinely at that time thought that after I said that prayer, I was going to be character defects free from that point on. And so I think I subconsciously started to harbor resentment, or internally. I wasn't conscious of it, but I think from that point I started to harbor a resentment towards God. And that resentment actually stayed up until I got to step 12, because I had this expectation that I would be fine, I would be free, I would be completely changed, and God was not going according to my script. Steps eight and nine, making the list was fine, making amends was also fine. The biggest lesson, or I would say blessing, that I got from step nine. Steps eight and nine, but step nine was the reconciliation with my brother. There was something that happened in my childhood with my brother, and I have tried in various ways over the years to be free of that resentment and to just be able to honestly and just be open with my brother and just have that peace of mind. And I never got it until step 9. I didn't think it was possible. I had resigned myself to it not being possible. But step 9, actually, there was that a genuine peace, genuine love, genuine reconciliation, to the point where I can go by my brother's house and just chat and laugh with him and not have this thing sitting in my chest. I just a point, I was seeing the clock and I'm not seeing it anymore. And so I don't know how much time I have left. So I don't know why that is.
Sorry, I'm not sure why it's not showing, but it's 10 minutes.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So I can keep track. Thank you so much. So step 10, step 10, what I learned from doing step 10, the inventory, that inventory tool is a powerful tool. And it, you know, being it helps to transform resentments, fear, whatever is happening in that moment, discontent, whatever it is, into me not looking across the street to what others are doing, but in act it actually helps me to see my side, what's going on in me, and it helps me to surrender back to God. Surrender in that moment, surrender that thing or those things, because some days, you know, I may do multiple step 10s. Step 11 came full circle because that's where, you know, God brought me in from the very first meeting. Something that I took in step 11 was that I had stopped meditating. I don't know, I started off doing it, and then somewhere along the line, I started thinking that prayer and meditation were synonyms. I was very wrong. They are not synonyms. And so in step 11, I relearned the difference between, okay, I can see the clock again, the difference between those two things, between prayer and meditation, praying for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. The step 11, that daily practice of on awakening, surrendering the discontent and the dishonesty, the self-seeking, you know, that deliberate act each day, is a practice that, most days in my journal, I will, you know, write it out, so that I'm deliberate about, surrendering those things to God. And of course, in step 12, because I think from step 7, it was percolating in the back of my mind, this resentment, but I kept thinking, okay, maybe I just need to finish all 12 steps, and then all the character defects will disappear. So when I got to step 12, I really started feeling the full manifestation of the discontent that had been growing in step 7. And so I spoke to a fellow, because, you know, I spoke to my sponsor and spoke to a fellow, and this person said to me, he said, "You know, you have religion, but you don't have spirituality." Oof, that one touched me. He said to me that when you take yourself out of yourself, when you're focused on yourself, you're, of course, self-centered. But helping others is God-centered. And you know, you have religion, you have the actions of faith, but spirituality is a completely different thing. And you're connecting with God, your meditation, and that word came up again. And I thought, ah, okay, meditation. And so what I thought I knew in step 11 really came to fruition in step 12, that meditation is hearing from God while prayer is talking to God, right? Meditation is listening, right? As much as you know, I may do a two-way prayer, but the bulk of the prayer is me listening to God's response, right? And so, how can I be of service became the question, a life question. And so, in my last few minutes here, I will ask the question and see, try to answer it. Has my life improved as a result of doing the steps? You know, I really sat and thought about it. I thought about it deeply. Has my life improved? I have worked these steps. I am now living in the reality of these steps. I live especially in steps 10, 11, and 12, but of course, step 10 is really a reworking of 1 to 9. And so, has my life improved? And I must say unequivocally, yes, it has. Yes, it has. My life circumstances right now feel like they are spiraling out of control. My mom, especially with my mom who has dementia, Alzheimer's, and it's really ramped up, and it's extremely difficult to the point where I go to her house first thing in the morning before I go to work. I leave home at like 6:30, then I work in Toronto, then I come back home and finish work at 4, so you know what that's looking like on the roadway. And then I go straight to her house and do her afternoon stuff, and then I go home and then back, supper, sleep, spend some time with my husband, prayer with him, worship, go to sleep, get up, reap. My life has just, but I don't eat over any of it. That wasn't even an option for a girl like me. I used to hear people say, "Oh, I'm too angry to eat," or "I'm too sad to eat. I'm too this to eat." I was never too anything to eat. I ate over everything. But not today. I also used to, I didn't have control over my emotions. And I'm not saying that I have full control over my emotions now, but there are some key things that are missing now that were always present with me before the steps. I used to be suicidal, and I didn't realize that being suicidal, that my how it manifested in my life was as a direct result of my eating. I did not realize that. I just thought, life is hard and oh, I can't deal with things. No, it was literally a result of the food. And with abstinence, those thoughts went away. And, I'm not saying that, there are other mitigating circumstances in other people's lives. This is what has happened for me. And it's really mind-boggling to me that this has changed as a result of working the steps. I used to think about death all the time, especially my loved ones dying. What would I do if my son, he's 25 and he's coming home and he crashes and he dies suddenly? How would I react? What would I do? I'm trying to prepare myself. What would I do if my husband died? Well, like death was forever and always on my mind, a constant companion. Not anymore. In fact, it's just today or like this morning that I realized, wait a minute, I don't even think about it anymore like I used to. I used to constantly feel useless and inadequate. And yes, God is still working on it, but it's not a constant companion anymore. I can see, I am able to see that, no, I'm able to accept, which is what I started with. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. More and more, I am learning to accept me as I am, be okay with it because God's okay with it. And what he's working on, he'll work on. And what needs to change, he'll change in his time. My self-critical voice is lessening. My ability to hear God is improving. Before coming to OA, I used to take responsibility for my actions, but now I'm recognizing things as they happen instead of, I say whatever, do whatever in reflection, then I come and I acknowledge and I apologize. Now I'm actually able to see it as it's happening. So has my life improved as a result of doing the steps? It completely has. My life isn't even about the food anymore, which I could not envision a day that my life would be where it is today, where the thing that I'm thinking about isn't what's my next meal going to be. I spent so many years thinking about that, but now my life is simply, how can I be of service? Oh, how can I hear God better? That's really, if I'm to be truthful, that's what my life is mostly about today. How can I hear God better and serve Him better and do His will better? And so in my last minute, I will say that for someone who might be wondering, like I was way back in March, can this thing that other people are talking about, can it be true for me? Can I have what they keep saying they have? That's how I felt. Yes, you can. And it's not because of any magic or anything crazy. It's because it is what God wants for you anyways, and He has provided 12 simple but not always easy steps to get you to that very thing that you've always longed for, freedom from the obsession. And you might actually get something that maybe you weren't longing for, but a connection with Him that will see you through every single situation and circumstance you will ever face. You will never face it alone because He will always be with you. And this is His desire for you. I hope that my talk, that my experience, my life has been helpful. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. That was beautiful.